This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
If you've been house hunting recently, you've probably had this experience. You see a place quoted at one price, spend your weekends turning up to inspections, and then it sells for something dramatically higher. It's frustrating for buyers, confusing for sellers, and it distorts the whole property market. This practice, known as underquoting, has been featured in the news quite a bit lately. Nicole Rich, Director of Consumer Affairs Victoria, has recently released updated guidance for real estate agents on how they choose comparable properties, which sits at the heart of preventing underquoting. Nicole joins us now. Nicole, welcome back to Drive. Nicole, let's start at the beginning. What exactly is underquoting and why is it a problem for buyers?
Yes, and I get asked a lot to define underquoting. So there's sort of a technical definition and then there's Nicole's definition. So the technical definition under the Victorian law is underquoting is any time that you advertise or sort of indicate the price of the property and it's below either the estimate of the sales price that the agent has actually given their client, the vendor, or it's below a price that the vendor has said they will take, like their asking price. If you know what that is, you can't advertise below that. Or if it's below an offer that you've rejected, then you've got to, you can't advertise below that. But my sort of definition is basically it's just any kind of misleading advertising about price. Like if you're advertising a property at a particular price and it's just misleading in some way, it's too low, then that, in my view, is underquoting.
Yeah. And I think, like, speaking of someone who's been looking at houses lately, there is, I'll go and look online and look at a price of a house and go, or an apartment, I'm looking for an apartment and go, it's going to sell for way more than that. So is that kind of, because I've been looking at the market for quite a bit and I'm like, I know comparable properties within that similar area.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, you know, this isn't to sort of suggest you shouldn't do your homework. I mean, I still think it's really sensible that when you're a potential buyer out in the market, that you're doing your homework, you're sort of looking at what things are going for, and then you do start to get a sense of what the market is paying for a property, and that helps to educate you, and then you kind of know what your budget is and what you're likely, you know, what sort of properties are likely to be in your budget. So that's always a sensible thing to do. But I still think underquoting, you know, is such a frustration for people because it does distort the market. It's not transparent. You will get sucked in from time to time as a potential buyer where it's a really disappointing outcome because the properties clearly was never going to go for that price. So while it doesn't sort of let you off the hook to do your own research, it's just not an okay practice. I mean, we don't tolerate misleading practices in other areas of business and trading. So why would we hear? And yet it's become quite an entrenched practice that we're trying to resolve.
Yeah. So as like I was thinking about this, like we hear about it from the buyer's perspective, obviously it distorts the market there. Are there any disadvantages for sellers having underquoting that you're aware of from your perspective?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I don't always get asked that, Lathan, but from my perspective, there is. So I do have concerns that one of the reasons that it happens is not just that it's kind of encouraging people to come to the auction and then sort of waste time, but it sort of makes it look like a bigger crowd. I actually do think part of it is affecting potential vendors as well. So people sort of get a confused sense of what their property might be worth putting on sale. It can lead to confusion from vendors about whether the agent is giving them an accurate sense of expectations. Maybe it gives them an inaccurate sense of what a good result was. And even we've got a court case that's been running for a little while in the federal court, and it's an underquoting case. And while we're obviously concerned about the impact on the buyers, we've also been really open that we were concerned about the impact on the clients who sold the properties. So what happened in those cases were the clients actually dropped their reserve price, their expectation of what the property would sell for, based on the agent sort of saying, well, we think it's going to sell for less. And then they agreed to a commission structure where they would pay an additional amount if the vendor beat their reserve on the day. And then the property's all sold for above the reserve. So they paid higher commissions. And in our view, that's sort of part of what the conduct was that was so concerning to us.
Yeah, that's very concerning. And yes, I was just thinking too, from a seller's perspective, if you have an expectation about what price you'll get for your property, potentially you've bought another property already expecting to have additional funds that you may not have due to the fact that your property doesn't sell for what you expect it to be.
Yes.
Coming back, so you recently released updated guidelines about choosing how real estates choose comparable properties. Yes. Do you want to talk to us about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I should say that, you know, our underquoting task force, we have a dedicated task force on this issue, and we've had it for a few years now. And about a third of the complaints and reports that come to us are from other agents. So just to make the point that there's actually a lot of real estate agents out there that are trying to do the right thing and want to do the right thing. So we've certainly noticed that it's, from my perspective, it's probably not as widespread as it was, and I think that's a really positive thing, but unfortunately it is still occurring. So we issued these new guidelines because too often our inspectors are still seeing these examples. So what the Victorian law says is an agent has to give an assessment of what they think the property is going to sell for using their professional judgment and experience. They have to give a reasonable estimate of that to the client, and then you've got to advertise. You can't advertise below that reasonable estimate. To set the reasonable estimate, you have to look at what similar comparable properties in the local area sold for. So that's, you know, clearly the thing we all do is look at comparable properties. So the law says you've got to look at least three comparable properties, what they sold for, and you actually have to list them in the advertising. So that's part of the law now. So the law has a technical definition of what a comparable property is. It's sort of anything in the local area within the last 6 months that sold. But we've seen a lot of examples where there are, you know, clearly in metropolitan Melbourne, there's more than three properties that would have sold in the last 6 months. So you've got a few to choose from. And we've seen, unfortunately, some agents are clearly choosing maybe properties that are not as similar, and there's like clearly more similar properties that have sold more recently that look a lot more like the property that's for sale, but they sold for a higher price. And so they will cherry pick properties in the area that maybe sold for less for various reasons to try and make it look like the price is lower, but actually it's not really giving an accurate assessment. So the sorts of things we were seeing is, you know, they'd pick a property that was in the local area but was in a different school zone, which which reduces the value of the home. Or we even saw an example where the duplex townhouse next door had recently sold, and they didn't use that as one of the comparable properties. They used other properties. So just these really obvious examples where they could have chosen a more comparable property.
Yeah.
So the guidelines we've reissued are just much stricter on the guidance. They're saying these are the sorts of things you must take into account in choosing which are the most comparable properties to help in setting the price.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that helps support, you know, a fairer market for all. So are there any penalties for agents who are deliberately underquoting?
Yeah, and actually the penalties as of yesterday went up. So that's kind of an interesting development. So the penalties are not insubstantial. So until yesterday, they were sort of up to $40,000 for each breach. As of today, that's gone up. So that was a reform that the government brought in because of concern to make sure that the penalty really reflects the community concern. Under the Australian Consumer Law, which also applies, the penalties are really high. So if you engage in sort of breaches of the prohibition on false representations, which we think can apply here, the penalties can be up to $2.5 million for individuals and $50 million for companies. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, a one-off false representation is going to get a $50 million penalty, but certainly what that's signalling is that the courts need to take consumer law breaches very, very seriously. And in fact, the case I was talking about that has quite concerning behaviour, we've actually brought that in the federal court under the consumer law, not just the underquoting laws. So the penalties are potentially going to be quite high if we're successful in proving our case.
Yeah. And you actually answered the question I just had as far as, like, you know, repeated underquoting when you're finding that out. It sounds like there's a framework in place, you know, for increased penalties. So therefore, that is a disincentive. But sometimes I wonder whether, you know, we've had examples in the past separate to real estate, but in, say, environmental laws where there's been a company that has discharged waste into waterways and they factored in of, you know, well, we'll get a fine for that, but it's cheaper than actually discarding the waste. Yes. I was wondering whether in real estate they factor it in, oh, well, I'll get a fine for underquoting, but it's okay, I'll make it up in my commission. So it sounds like that there's...
Well, that's interesting you say that, Lathan, because I didn't say that as well as increasing just the actual fine amount that the court can award, the other thing that changed as of yesterday is that you can lose your commission for breaching the underquoting provisions as an addition. So they've expanded those laws and, so the maximum penalties now that you'd face as an agent, a potential forfeiture of your commission as well as the fine. So it's quite a disincentive.
Yeah.
And sometimes people say, oh, it's, you know, sometimes we use infringements, which are just sort of on-the-spot fines, which obviously have a lower penalty. bounty, but they, you know, they're sort of more efficient for, I guess, lower level breaches.
Yes.
And people say, well, is that really a disincentive? Isn't that the cost of doing business? But I really want to assure listeners that that it does have a hip pocket effect. Like, you know, the average commission for an agent on the sale of a property, if they've received an infringement from Consumer Affairs Victoria, that takes a significant chunk out of the commission. It really means they're going to be working for cost on that long campaign. So I can assure you that agents feel it, and they don't want to be fined. So I do believe that it's having a strong disincentive. But even under the consumer law, actually, like, there's a bit of technicality to this, but that $50 million penalty I mentioned, that's kind of shorthand. What the law actually says, it's $50 million or a particular percentage of the profit that you made from the misconduct, or a certain percentage of your turnover, whichever is higher. So the courts actually have the ability to completely disincentivize systemic practices by basically taking away the profit that the company made.
Yeah, and it sounds like, just based on what you've told us now, even though you've got the stronger, you know, disincentives in place, that there was already significant progress in this underquoting area.
Well, I think so. Just our activity out there and the sort of level of inspections and fines has really, I think, started to shift behaviour. Look, not to say we definitely have a way to go. The government made an announcement last week about their intention to change the law to sort of further strengthen the protections on underquoting. So clearly that's a signal that there's more to be done. We're still getting, you know, several thousand reports about underquoting in a year. So clearly it's still a frustration for people. I'm not suggesting that we've completely eliminated it, but I do believe that over time we're having a significant impact and we are stamping it out, you know, steadily.
Yeah, and as we know, with all industries, change, you know, change in practices does take time.
Yes.
So, so for people who are currently selling, this is a bit of advice here, are there some tips or some advice that they can go to as far as looking for an agent where they think that, you know, an agent to ensure, you know, effective price transparency? Is there any advice that you could provide there?
I mean, there's some general tips. Like, I would always suggest, you know, definitely ask two or three agents for a quote and sort of their package of what they can offer, so that you're making a proper assessment based on some choice. Make sure that you have a look at what they're saying. You know, the agents will give you a sense of what the market is offering. They'll do a comparative assessment. They'll give you a sense of what they think you could get from your property. I always say, like, just be cautious. Like, it's always attractive to go for the agent that says they can get you the highest price, but that in itself can be a trap. So sometimes people call that overquoting by agents to get a client, and then they'll work on you to say, oh, actually there hasn't been as much interest, so drop your expectations, and that can be really disappointing. So before you get sucked into that kind of practice, just make sure you really look at what the agents are telling you that they can get and what they're basing their assessment on, and you know, do your own thinking about whether you think that's right. Also look around, references, etc., about the experience that others have had with an agent. They're really good tips before you choose who you're going to go with. But in saying that, I do encourage people to engage an agent. They can do a great job, and they can really take the stress out of the process for you.
Yeah. And are there any resources out there that people could have a look at, just based on the advice that you've just provided now, as far as that when they're either buying or selling a property?
Well, I mean, I always plug the Consumer Affairs Victoria website on this program, Lathan, so I definitely do that again. But actually, quite seriously, there's quite a bit of information for both buyers and sellers. And there's even things like we've got like a checklist for people who are thinking about selling their property, about what to look for. There's also a due diligence checklist for potential buyers of property. So there's some really handy resources on there.
Great. So if they Google Consumer Affairs Victoria, they'll be able to find some of those resources out there.
Yeah, consumer.vic.gov.au.
Fantastic. Nicole, always great to have you here on Drive.
Thank you, Lathan.
Now, getting to something a little less serious now than underquoting, I hear that you are a Gaga fan, and Gaga is going to be here, I think, next week.
Yes, Warren and I think both going to be going to the concert.
Yes, and so am I. So it must just be this Gaga flavour here on Drive. Now, are we going to go out with a Gaga song? What is your song that we're going out with today?
Well, I think, you know, last time I picked some of the newer ones, so let's go with a classic. I think we're going to go, can we go with Alejandro?
Let's go with Alejandro. Great to have you here, Nicole.
Thanks, Lathan.
That was Nicole Rich, the Director of Consumer Affairs Victoria. And as mentioned, you can find out more information on selling and underquoting at consumer.vic.gov.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.